From the KTO of Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Juneau's largest event space is reopening next month. After 9 months of renovations, Centennial Hall's ballrooms have new lighting, sound, and heat systems. Kathleen Harper is Centennial Hall's house manager. She says the space is booked for every weekend through mid-December.
We're already starting to book things for 2024, 2025.
Centennial Hall is owned by the city. Juneau voters approved a $7 million bond to fund the renovations in 2019. The renovated ballroom has 90 new light fixtures and 53 new speakers. Eric Brewer is a project manager for Alcan Electric and Engineering.
Each individual speaker, each individual theater lighting receptacle can be controlled individually instead of as a big group and can even be pre-programmed such that you can just push the start button and it's all choreographed and automated. So the computer's doing it all.
Each of the three ballrooms can be heated or cooled separately. The building has six new heat pumps. The contractor also kept about 80% of construction waste out of the landfill by reusing or recycling it. Board game convention Platypus Con will be the first public event held at Centennial Hall from September 8th to the 10th. The 8th annual Glitz Drag Show will follow on September 15th and 16th. At last week's meeting, Petersburg's Assembly set a new precedent for the sale of borough-owned tidelands. KFSK's Shelby Herbert has a story on the marine diesel repair facility at the heart of the issue.
The owners of Wecon Enterprises Incorporated have been in the game for over 30 years. Now, Sherry and John Wecon are looking to retire and sell their business. The thing is, they own the building at 103A Dock Street, but they don't own the land beneath it. That's because their property is leased through what's called the Marine Industrial Park, which is managed by the borough. Now, the Wecon family's potential buyers, Earl Warner and Hillary McDonald, are having trouble securing financing because they can't purchase the business outright. McDonald says that's because the banks don't consider it a real property.
The market value of the building, as we've learned through this process, is drastically reduced. And so while a bank will loan on a leasehold improvement, the value is not there, which there's a huge difference between the current market value as it stands and the asking price and what the Wecons need to get in order to retire how they'd planned.
In order to offload their repair shop, the Wecons are petitioning to buy the land they've leased for decades. In her public testimony, Sherry Wecon asked the Assembly if holding on to the property is more important to them than any potential economic benefits to Petersburg, with special attention to their primary customers in the fishing industry.
We have also lost a lot of shipyard businesses to Wrangell, South Seattle, Bellingham, and other small shipyards. Can Petersburg fishermen afford to lose more support to keep their fishing vessels running safely and efficiently?
Assemblymember Scott Newman says the original concept of a leaseholder agreement already served its purpose, reserving the Marine Industrial Park for marine businesses. But now, he says, it doesn't really work for the community.
I feel like the borough's responsibility to the public is to encourage economic growth and not to inhibit it. I feel like we need to be in a good working relationship with our service providers. That includes an exit strategy for the people that have businesses to be able to transition and move on.
Assemblymember Donna Marsh echoed Newman's desire to encourage local business growth. She also said it's important to her that the particular services offered by Wecon Enterprises prevail.
We've got a critical business here, a diesel marine repair shop that I know when commercial fishermen are dead in the water, that's it.
Assemblymember Bob Lynn pushed back, saying it's a slippery slope.
I think we're also setting a precedent because once we sell one, I see no reason that the Assembly should not sell all the rest.
And that could mean the borough won't be able to collect rent on all the waterfront property that gets sold down the line. There are 11 other properties in this kind of arrangement, netting the Harbor Department around $160,000 a year. Harbor Master Glorianne Wolin also has some reservations. She asked the Assembly to think about how the resolution could affect long-term projects on the waterfront.
There are several waterfront leases that are located within other Harbor Enterprise locations, and I'm interested on how the Assembly evaluates future development that sometimes takes decades to plan versus immediate needs of an individual nestled within the property that the harbor has interest in.
The resolution to approve the Wecon family's application passed. Barely. Members Bob Lynn, Jeff Miucci, and Dave Kenzinger all voted against it. And with that part out of the way, the Assembly unanimously voted to exempt the sale of the land from public auction. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
There's lots of foot traffic along the banks of the Yukon River. Wolves, moose, bears, porcupines, and countless birds leave their footprints in the silt and mud all the time. And almost 100 million years ago, dinosaurs did the same. Some scientists had doubts local residents knew they were there. But as KYU case Emily Schwing reports, people who live along the river have known about them for years.
Back in 2013, the first team to find dinosaur tracks along the Yukon River said it was unlikely locals who live here know about them. But Rita Painter can prove them wrong.
Okay, it was maybe about 30 to 35 years ago, and that's when they had a fish wheel right down here.
Painter stands in a long aluminum boat pulled up on the riverbank of Halfway Camp. It's a fish camp 12 miles downriver from Nulato. She's known the family who owns this camp for decades.
Well, one summer we stopped with them coming up from Grayland. They invited us to have some tea. And while we were visiting with them, they showed us this big rock. It was huge. And there was a footprint on the rock.
Painter says it was big, really big. Maybe a foot or so wide and about 8 inches long.
It was clearly a foot, but the toes looked different. So, and it was embedded in a rock.
How many toes did it have?
I cannot remember. Could you remember, Dean?
I had three.
Three toes, says Rita's husband, Dean Painter, from the back of his boat. This is a pretty accurate description of a footprint made by a bipedal plant-eating dinosaur known as ornithopod. And there are dozens of them along this span of the riverbank where Martha Turner grew up fishing.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. Like, our camp has all these dinosaur tracks.
Turner says her grandmother, who was born at Halfway Camp, never mentioned any large three-toed footprints to her before. Now she's eager to ask about it.
It's like, it's just, how come you never shared this with us before, you know? But they're older now, and it's just coming back, and they're sharing everything.
This summer, three scientists spent 16 days on the Yukon. Their aim is to better understand the ancient reptiles and birds that once lived here. But they also want to understand what locals have known for years. In Caltag, a village just over 30 miles downriver from Nulato, news that a research team was finding dinosaur tracks there this summer came as no surprise.
Ever since we're this big, ever since we're 3 foot high, we knew.
Patrick Madros Jr., who most people call Patty Bun, says he's been finding ancient footprints in the rocks along the riverbank his entire life. He grew up at a fish camp even further downriver.
You would never think twice about it. It's just not a rock thrown on a pile.
He didn't think twice about it because subsistence fishing was the priority.
Because, you know, when we work as a family group, we work to eat, and we worked all together, and we produced what we needed.
I don't think it's something that people would stop and say, we need to dig here and look around here.
Violet Burnham is Caltag's mayor.
Because there's so many other things that we face as a community that are just more important.
Burnham was born in Caltag, and she says things have changed drastically, and it's been hard on her community. Jobs are limited, and in recent years, the salmon populations people rely on for food have crashed.
I mean, just in my lifetime, we went from no phones, to internet, to 24 hours a day news, to from a subsistence lifestyle to a cash-based economy. And that just created a lot of havoc with people.
Yoshitsugu Kobayashi uses a camera to create 3D images of every track the research team records. He's a paleontologist from Japan's Hokkaido University. Instead of removing footprints themselves as specimens to be housed in a museum archive, the team relies on these photos and also makes molds of the footprints.
So if we can just take all the data virtually, then leave all the specimens behind so that maybe local people can look at them or kids can, you know, look at them. for me, it's like, you know, it's not ours. Data we can use for science, but the specimens belong to this place.
Along the Yukon River, I'm Emily Schwing.
This is KTOO.